Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos. Aquí nos quedamos y aquí ganamos. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome to the Dog Pod, your home for fans of your 10-2 Pac-12 North champions, Alamo Bowl-bound Washington Huskies tackle football team. So much to cover today, Law Dog. Hey, let's not bury the news. We got to get into Mike Pence Jr. coming back. Who else is in? Who else might be out? Look, we got a date with Coach Sark, Coach Kwiatkowski, and the Isle of Misfit coaches down there in Texas. Some transfer portal news, the rest of the Pac-12 bowls, and of course, a tribute to the one and only, the Pirate. We got to get into it, buddy. Law Dog, you ready for it?
Deep in the heart of Texas.
Let's do it. Speaking of that, look, phones started buzzing around Sunday, December 4th. I started getting a flurry of texts, and this one was unlike when Coach Pete decided he wasn't coming back and my phone blew up. Happy news. Mike Penix Jr., shocking Husky world, announcing he is going to return, surprising everyone, his teammates. Coach DeBoer, nobody knew. He put together a video with the video team that really looked like, I'm sure you saw it, looked like, hey, I'm leaving. It's been a great team. And then said, unfinished business, I'm coming back. I mean, wow. Like, talk about the impact of this and what it does for the team. How big a news is this for Husky Nation?
Well, I mean, it is everything to Husky Nation. I mean, you know, I think you're already seeing the impact. You saw, we're going to talk about Thule in a second, but, you know, some players are quoted as saying, you know, this was a factor in my decision of what I'm going to do. So, yeah, let's get the band back together one more time. I think that's a huge motivating factor for some guys. And I think we can all agree it was kind of a shocking turn of events that no one thought Penix would be coming back. I mean, regardless of where his grade is in the NFL draft, he is going to get drafted. And after a kind of a bumpy college career, especially with injuries, losing the first four seasons to injuries, he seems to want to prove that he can be healthy and make it through another season. And you know, I've got to think that the performance of this offensive line played a big role in that this year. They really kept him clean most of the season, one of the best sack rates in the country. And I think he was probably looking at Roger Rosengarten and saying, I got you, buddy. You know, thanks for all the help this year. I'm going to be back next year. And I mean, I think it immediately puts the Huskies in contention for the conference title. I mean, they were right in the mix for that this season. Of course, there's a lot of moving parts and players could be coming in and out between now and then. But I think right now that's the biggest shot in the arm the Huskies could have gotten. And rather than kind of wondering what's next, we just turn right to 2023 and say, bring on USC, bring on the big boys.
Absolutely. And particularly, I think this news is impactful because we didn't really have an heir apparent ready to go.
Right.
You know, and most people were saying, I think that the starter on 2023 is not on the roster. And it turns out he was on the roster. He was starting the whole year and he's coming back another year. This puts him in that conversation where we were talking about, wow, is this one of the greatest Husky quarterback seasons ever? To he has the chance to be one of the greatest Husky quarterbacks. This just reminds me, December 14th, 2009, Jake Locker announced he would return. And I think that shocked a lot of people as well. And we weren't coming off of a season in 2009 like we were in 2022 by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it was another word. Look, Jake could have gotten drafted and he probably would have drafted higher that year than he was the next year. But it was definitely just as exciting. I mean, this is incredible. It's a big news.
Yeah, no, I think the main difference is Locker was a local kid. He was a Husky through and through. He committed to Tyrone Willingham. You know, so I think, you know, when he announced he was coming back, it wasn't like, you know, it didn't
fall
shock anyone. Yeah,
yeah,
but yeah, it didn't make you fall off a chair. But Penix, I mean, kid from Tampa, Florida, went to college at Indiana, and now, you know, he's in Seattle, and, you know, he's apparently liking what he's doing, and he's liking his setup here because he's coming back for one more year. I mean, one thing that the kind of unspoken angle on this whole thing is what kind of NIL package was put together to keep him around. Mm-hmm. I think it's impossible to know that answer, but I think you'd have to think if your NIL collective, and I've been, you know, listening to a lot of reading a lot about this stuff, and all these various schools have these collectives, and you know, your money is much better spent on a guy who's thrown for 4,000 yards and, you know, won 10 games than it is on a offensive lineman who's never played a down who went to Rainier Beach High School, just using a random example.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Ed, I can give you some insight to that. The word on the street is $4.5 million, you know, which is pretty nice and takes out some of the sting of what you might miss in that first year. And look, if he ends up being a higher first rounder next year, he's sitting pretty.
So, I mean, $4.5 million, whoa, that's a jaw dropper. But at the same time, you know, that's the kind of money that it would probably take to get you to look the other way on the NFL draft, where it's like, you know, that may be like fourth round money over That's the right. course of a contract, or third round money.
That's right. And look, and what do I know? But, you know, it's big cash, but doesn't surprise me. And I think that's kind of the money that's going around. Amazing though. The other big news, Tuli Lotulegassanoa. And I mean, maybe even bigger just because of what a huge impact he was on the defense and where that's the biggest weakness for us. He announces he's coming back. Massive impact on the defensive line for the defense. I think the other guys that we're waiting to hear on, Rome Adunze and Jalen McMillan. And I would guess, and everything I'm hearing is that with Mike Penix coming back, both of them will be back, which would be incredible. And then Troy Fautanu, I've not heard back from. And then ZTF is saying, you know, hey, I've got a lot of things to think about. Is there anybody else that you're waiting on decisions?
Price, maybe. I think that D line, I mean, Lotulegassanoa has become a big force. It's taken a few years, you know, for him to blossom into that, what we thought he could be, but he really was a big part of that D line this year. The edge guys though, you know, even though you're fairly deep there, you lose one, you might be okay. You lose two, and I'm looking around going, okay, who's up next? Savelle Smalls. And we could be, you know, that was the best part of your defense this year that wasn't exactly lighting the conference on fire. So I'm hoping, for the Huskies' sake, that those guys look at Mike Penix and go, okay, we got a chance to do some things. I'm going to stay one more year.
Well, I hope so. And look, in a future show, end of the season, after the Alamo Bowl, so many moving parts, we're going to get into what this full 2023 roster looks like with a lot of eyes on the defense. Because, look, you can't rely on this team to put up 50 every week and be that conference champion that we expect them to be, or hope them to be next year. We'll get into that later on. But we got other things coming up. Mike Penix is coming back from the bowl. We're going to hear all those names are going to be back playing. We haven't heard of anybody sitting out. The Alamo Bowl, Thursday, December 29th, 6 p.m. on ESPN. The 30th Alamo Bowl at the Super Bowl in San Antonio. This is our second visit. The last one was a total shootout and very memorable. We visit the old Longhorns of Texas of the Big 12. At least for two more seasons, they'll be there. They finished the year 8-4 with close losses to number 17 TCU, 10-17, 19-20 to then number 1 Alabama. A game that I was at. This is the first time that I'll ever have seen our bowl opponent in person, and can talk about my experience and, you know, what I saw with the Texas team. And they get an OT loss to unranked Texas Tech at the time. And then 34-41, a loss to then 11 Oklahoma State. So really, look, close losses, all of them. Best one of the year, probably 34-27 at number 13 K-State. Interesting thing, Texas comes into this game favored by 4.5. We'll get into this later. Only two Pac-12 teams, underdogs, coming into the bowls. And our Huskies are one of them, even though being, you know, higher ranked, et cetera, all the other you know, things that would make you think maybe they'd be ranked or they'd be.
And that line opened a lot higher, BT. It's come down it's towards come the down. Huskies, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of reasons that we'll get into that for that. But look, what do you think about this team, and how are you feeling about, you know, this high powered Husky offense? Are they going to be able to continue what they did in the Pac-12 against that Texas defense?
Well, you mentioned the close losses they had, right? Including to the numbers, what, 3 and 5 teams in the CFP rankings, Alabama and TCU. Mm-hmm. Very close losses to those two. And as a result, you look at the computer rankings or the advanced metrics and all that, you see the Texas, you know, team that's ranked pretty darn high for a team that's 8-4. Mm-hmm. I've seen rankings that have them above Washington even. And, you know, they didn't play a super aggressive schedule, although they did play Alabama at home. But, I mean, the Big 12 schedule wasn't you know, anything to write home about, I would say. But so I think, you know, you look at some of the advanced metrics. I think that's maybe why the line opened with Texas a lot higher. I think it opened at like, you know, 8 or 9, I want to say, and it's come down to 4.5. So I think, you know, the know-it-alls expect Texas to walk away with this one, but I think there are reasons to be optimistic. So without getting into the motivation of the players and teams in this one, let's just talk about football. But Texas defense, it's number 29 in the nation in scoring defense at about 21 points per game allowed. That's just ahead of Oregon State and Wazoo, who the Huskies have, you know, beaten this year. And they're number 50 in the nation in total yardage allowed. UW is 58. So that tells you they're definitely kind of a leaky defense. But the strength is really in stopping the run. They're 29th in the nation stopping the against the run yardage-wise, which 88th against the pass. And just for comparison's sake, the Huskies are 90th, BT. So this is like it's like we're playing ourselves on defense a little bit here. But they also surrendered a worse passer rating than UW did this season and just picked off 9 passes all season. So I don't think this is a pass defense that the Huskies should be too scared of going into this one. Plus, there's also the news that DeMarvian Overshown, their starting fifth-year senior linebacker, is opting out of the game. There will be others that you're going to talk about on the offensive side. But, I mean, you know, I think that that's – you know, you start to take a couple guys away from a defense that wasn't that great this season, and they had their moments for sure. But, you know, you start to see an opportunity where the Huskies, I think, could probably be able to move the ball and score some points against this defense.
Which is really interesting. I mean, look, we know the DC. This is Coach Kwiatkowski.
So he's coming out with a 4-2-5. They're doing a little bit different scheme than they did at UW. And their fifth is the Spur is the name of the fifth DB. And he's the smallest guy they've got. So they're definitely, you know, playing a little like kind of a more traditional scheme, kind of basically like the Huskies are now with a more traditional 4-2-5. So Kwiatkowski maybe not doing exactly what he was doing at UW, but and having a little bit of a bounce back. I mean, last year their defense was really, really bad, and you know they've bounced back a little bit this year. So who knows?
Yeah, they definitely have all the stars that you could want, and you know, and can fill in and tons of talent. And what do they do with it? The offense is going to be really interesting against this Husky defense historically. So this year in 2022, really strong run game, 1580 yards behind Bijan Robinson, 554 behind Roschon Johnson. The thought is that neither will play as they prep for the NFL. Huge losses. And Bijan Robinson, I mean, it's you're hard-pressed to find a more impactful running back in college football.
No, he's been one of the best in the country. However, I feel very confident that they'll have some other five-star or highly rated four-star to take his place.
They do. I mean, this most likely leaves what I think is freshman John Brooks with the carries, you know, who, you know, another five-star absolute physical specimen who doesn't have a lot of touches this year because there isn't enough to go around, but I think will fill right in. Look, we know this offense. This is the Sark offense. We know what to expect. Bunch of RPOs, a lot of slants that they like to use. Quinn Ewers, the freshman, you know, he's going to get the start with a healthy dose of him passing to Javion Sanders, the tight end, Xavier Worthy, and Jordan Whittington. Both those wide receivers are 6'1". So you're not going to burn you on you know, out jumping to the corner, but the speed. I saw it when I was, you know, down at the Alabama-Texas game I went to this year of so much yard after contact, really speedy receivers in the open field. They average 35 points a game. And I think, look, they're going to need a little bit more than that against these Huskies, particularly against that. I think that we should be able to move the ball through the air. We should be able to put up points. And I think you know, they're really going to have to be able to establish some type of a run game to get that RPO working, get that balanced offense. And maybe it's John Brooks who's ready to go, but they're going to need to be up for it. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, the Sark offense, you know, I'm really anxious to see how he's grown and developed as a coach. I mean, certainly we were running kind of that traditional pro style offense with a lot of, you know, bootlegs and long developing pass plays and that kind of thing, mixed in with some short West Coast stuff. And then, you know, we went to that hurry up as we progressed, and that was taking over college football in, you know, the 2012-13 time frame. And that was his best team, was the Keith Price team that ran, you know, high tempo offenses. And, you know, we saw them in a shootout. We saw the Huskies had that big shootout with Baylor in their first Alamo Bowl trip about 10 years ago. And I expect this one's going to be more of the same, BT, more shootout.
I think it will be. Motivation is going to come into it. I heard one of the interviews the other day, which, you know, and on the defense, and Husky saying, yeah, you know, look, we know this isn't really where we wanted to be, but don't worry, we're all in on it. I thought, oh, geez, you know, that's worse, because that's where, you know, I hate to say from a Husky perspective, maybe because there was such a good chance we felt like we were going to end up in the Rose Bowl. In your circle, let me ask you this, Lawdog. I know of one person going. How many people do you know going to this?
Yeah, I'm curious who it is. I do not know anybody who's going. And yeah, no, I think the Huskies' motivation is probably not what it should be, not what it could be. And it was a little bit of a disappointing end. We didn't really get into championship week there, but I mean, Utah, you know, sticking it to SC on Friday night last week, it basically, you know, ended the Rose Bowl dream right there. And even so, I mean, you still may have had a Rose Bowl that took Utah over the Huskies, even if they had been defeated in that game. But I think, you know, I was at a Christmas party on Friday night, you know, with the game on in the background, and just like, hey, we're going to the Rose Bowl if we can pull this out, you know, here. So there's definitely that kind of letdown factor. However, look at Texas. I mean, you know, that's a program that has a lot of high hopes every season. They had a huge, huge victory shutout over Oklahoma earlier this year, and it really looked like they were taking off. And then they kind of dropped a couple of disappointing games, you know, down the stretch, including that TCU game. Yeah, and Tech. And so, I mean, you know, I don't know that, you know, and they're going to have a few players at least opting out. There could be some more. So, you know, I don't know that they're going to be, I don't know the motivation is going to be super one-sided either way here.
That's right. It's interesting because, like, the Alamo Bowl, I don't know if it gets its due, because there's, you know, they'll draw 60,000 fans, which is going to be a largely Texas orange, I mean, burnt orange fan base. But over the years, it's been a mix of a lot of top 15 teams. A lot of solid top 15 matchups that get there.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a Larry Scott kind of deal when they went to expanded into the Pac-12, and they were still on good terms with the Big 12. They cut this deal, and it was supposed to kind of elevate the status of the Alamo Bowl and give, you know, the Pac-12 number 2 and the Big 12 number 3. But it just has never truly worked out exactly that way, because Big 12 has always had a team in the playoff. And so you kind of had to go down the ladder a little bit. And then here's the Pac-12, you know, that's kind of had disappointment after disappointment as it comes to the playoff. And a lot of teams that come in, like the Huskies, who are hoping for more.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And look, from a fan perspective, I just would say there isn't going to be a lot of purple and gold there. Actually, I know two people going to it. One lives in Texas. I don't know if that's going to count. Another is traveling into it. And look, I wish I could and go support the Dogs as well. I just hope the team's head is in the right spot, and that, you know, they realize that this is a chance to just put not only Penix coming back next year, put a stamp on this team and get some motive, some sort of extra juice going into next year. You know, that's what I'm hoping for, but we'll see.
You have a chance. You have a chance here to win 11 games, and it would only be the third or fourth time in program history that we've been able to do that. So, I mean, there is a lot to play for fans like you and me. I think it's tough when, you know, for the players, you know, if Mike Penix gets banged up on a play and he limps off the field, is he going to be going back in, you know, knowing that we have to take care of him for next year? You know, so there's things like that that factor into these kind of second tier bowl games. And luckily we don't have anyone who's opting out, but Texas does. And so I think those things can factor into how a game like this unfolds.
Look at it as much criticism as the defense has drawn, they got better throughout the year. The last three games look so much better, you know, than the first three and even the middle three. And so,
and against the tougher part of their schedule as well.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So look, I think it is going to be a close game. I think if the line at 9 was ridiculous, 4.5, I like that. I think it's going to be real close and love to see the Huskies pull this one out. But hey, we'll be back to talk about it as well after this game. Not the only Pac-12 team in action, though. This was a huge season for the Pac-12, the conference champions all up. Let's go through it real quick. Saturday the 17th, 11:30 a.m., number 14, Oregon State against Florida. Is this vengeance for the Pac in the Vegas Bowl? Oregon State favored by 10.5.
Yeah, I want zero part of Oregon State on that line. I mean, Florida beat Utah, the conference champions, you know, and yeah, they were at home, and yeah, it was the beginning of the season when everybody had a lot more to play for.
And Florida lost to Vanderbilt.
But I mean, speaking of a bunch of five stars on the roster, you know, Florida could play that game as well as anyone. I think Oregon State is going to be psyched to have a chance to beat an SEC team, and they'll have a big contingency in Vegas, and you know, I definitely think they'll get their best shot, but they still don't have a quarterback. And so give me the Gators all day on that line.
If later in the day, the only other team who is coming in from the Pack as an underdog, it's the other team from Washington, Wazoo, Fresno State, in the LA Bowl. Fresno State, the Bulldogs by 3.5 on ABC.
And I mean, the Pac-12's had trouble with this Mountain West a bowl alliance, right? Because the winner of the Mountain West goes to this, you know, it's now the LA Bowl.
The number 7 team from the back.
Yeah. I mean, I do not like the Cougs in this one. I think Fresno, you know, they're Jake Haner's last game. They've had a good team and a good program that our coach helped to build quite a bit. Give me the Bulldogs in this one.
Gosh. Okay. Wednesday, the 28th, it's number 15, Oregon, 13.5 point favorite with North Carolina, Holiday Bowl in Petco, 5 o'clock on Fox.
Yeah, this will be a very interesting one. North Carolina coming all the way back to the West Coast. And also, you know, ACC, if there was a conference that is comically overrated this year and most years, it's the ACC. And I think the Ducks, you know, they're definitely going to have a lot of guys in the portal, probably not playing in this game. But don't forget that their roster is another one like we're talking about, filled with talent. Next man up. I like the Ducks in this game. Maybe not at 10, but I definitely like them to win.
Yeah, this one's 13.5. Real big line. Oof. I think it's a little too much for me. Friday, let's stay with ACC and Pac-12. Friday the 30th, it's number 18 UCLA, 6.5 point favorite with Pitt in the Sun Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, talk about disappointing. I mean, here's UCLA starting out the season as like, we're going to the Big Ten, we're a big-time program, and, you know, started out hot. 4-0, beat Washington at home, were ranked in the top 10 most of the season, and then they fall all the way to the Sun Bowl. And they're gonna go from 68 degrees and sunny to like freezing cold mountain temperatures. But I do think that they are way better than this Pitt team, and I think I like them to win.
Yeah, I think they cover that as well. Finally, the big two on January 2nd. Here's the teams that played in the Pac-12 championship and earned these spots. So 10 a.m., number 16, Tulane, and number 10, USC in the Cotton Bowl. USC, 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't like Cincinnati a couple years ago or last year where you had a really elite kind of group of five team. This is Tulane. They're 9-3 or something like that. Yeah, they kind of won the AAC this year, but you know, I like the Trojans in this one. I don't think you're going to have a big motivation let down here. I think that they, you know, are excited to be playing in a big bowl game again after a really big down year. So I like the Trojans big in this one.
Later on in the day, number 2 p.m. number 11 Penn State and number 8 Utah. The Utes, 2.5 point favorites in the Rose Bowl.
Man, I hate to say it. I would love for our conference champions to go and win the Rose Bowl here. But I just, you know, we played Penn State in the Fiesta Bowl. They took it to USC in the Rose Bowl the year prior. That's a good program. That's a good team. And, you know, they don't have a lot of quality wins this year as opposed to where Utah does. But I just I kind of like Penn State in this game. They're a team that should be able to play up front. Utah's advantage over these last few years has been they have been dominant or very solid up front, especially in the Pac-12 conference. They're playing a Big Ten, you know, big boy bully here. And I don't think that advantage is going to carry over into this game. So give me the Nittany Lions.
The Nittany Lions in this. I'm going to stick with Utah. I think they've at least got by a field goal, maybe a bit more. The thing that worries me about Utah is, hey, welcome to big boy land. You got a bunch of opt-outs that I think are going to cause some problems, particularly, you know, their pass catchers. So Kincaid is out, opting out. And I think, what is it, Parks, I want to say? No. There's one more wide receiver who's opting out, so they're going to be missing a little bit of production there as well.
And this wasn't an offense that, like, lit the world on fire either. I mean, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I'll be rooting for them for sure. But I think that they're getting – I mean, they took Ohio State to the wire last year, but they did so by punching them in the mouth in the first half and jumping out to a big lead. They could do that against Penn State. Maybe they can hang on this time.
Yeah, the only other thing to talk about is the CFP, and of course it's Georgia, 6.5-point favorite, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU. Michigan, the 7.5-point favorite. The only thing, the only comment I'll make on this, you know, I think just Georgia just got done wrong. You know, that I think if they had their choice, they'd rather be playing TCU in this first round, and they've got to take on an Ohio State team. And probably the CFP and TV viewers just don't want to see another Ohio State Michigan in the first round. Like, we just saw that. But I don't know how you feel about that. Like, are they really playing the number four team from the Georgia team that's clearly the number one team in college football this year?
I think an Ohio State Michigan postseason game would be so cool. I mean, here you have this like storied rivalry, right? And it's always played that kind of rivalry weekend and, you know, national TV noon kickoff and all that. And here you go. And you're playing with all the stakes and everything on the line for that game. I don't know why that would be a factor. I think that would be awesome. And TCU, I mean, they have a big following. I think we should acknowledge. I mean, they're not just, you know.
Can you hear me? I lost you.
Yeah. They lost their championship game. Do you hear me?
Yeah. Stop. TCU Big Ten team start right from there, and then I'll cut it up.
Yeah. Here they go 12-1. They lost their championship game, and Ohio State was sitting on the sideline 11-1, not a conference champion. And somehow, you know, TCU doesn't really drop in the rankings at all. I think that that's a little crazy. I think Ohio State is the better team, and they should have gotten the higher seed.
Yeah, Michigan, Ohio State probably would have been fun. And yeah, look, you may see it. I give me all of Georgia. I feel really good about that. You know, and this one with Michigan and TCU, I think might even be a closer game. I think it's going to be really interesting. Last thing to touch about on Husky football is we're going to talk about the full 2023 roster and the look forward when we wrap up the Alamo Bowl, you know, probably end of December. But transfer portal, we got to talk about it. It has been much less interesting here than it has been to our neighbors down in Eugene, who have lost, you know, 75% of one of their classes, you know, popping out. But I think for us, there have been a few names coming out and a few names already coming in and a few names that we believe will join.
Yeah, I mean, the really interesting name coming out of Oregon, by the way, Justin Flo, the former five-star recruit, right? There was an article I read that said Washington was one of the teams that was contacting him the most. I think that would be really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of doubt that's going to happen. But, I mean, you can, you know, but that's where a guy like Penix sticking around, that's where that really helps you out. Because now it's like, oh, we're going to win this year. We're going to have a good team. I could be a part of that. So hopefully that will be an attractive entry point for some of these guys. I think the Huskies, you know, are probably a little bit in wait and see more mode, a little bit more the players themselves. I think they're going to wait to see kind of what happens, who opts out. I know Cam Williams and
Peopa
have already entered the portal. And, you know, those guys were buried on the depth chart. And that's the kind of guys that make sense. But I mean,
well, the only thing I'd say is they were different. I look at them differently. Where Peopa had some, you know, he was suspended, and you know, had some issues in which he was not going to what I believe he wasn't going to play for the Husky team.
We said he wasn't going to play again.
Right. And you know, transferred back home to be closer to family in Hawaii. That's he's already signed. Cam, well, you know, Cam was a big recruit and a position of need. And, you know, there is probably other things going on. We're buried in the depth chart for whatever reason. And we all knew when he asked to redshirt this year and not play more than four games. Like, oh, of course.
This was coming, yeah.
This is coming. This is a foregone conclusion for whatever reason. So that's the only ones we know right now. But I do believe there'll be others.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, they're trying to take a full class of high school players. So they have to, I think, see what signatures they get, especially as it pertains to Lincoln Kindholz in the quarterback position going into the portal season, basically, because they need to know kind of what their roster is going to look like. I think right now it's safe to say a guy like Justin Flo will make a spot for you, but whether it's, you know, I know they were looking at a JUCO tight end, for example, kind of a position of need, and they got a commitment from him, but
we don't have the Cuevas, you mean?
Yeah.
We don't have Cuevas signed.
Okay, well, they're expecting a commitment, I should say.
Yeah, he's taken visits to Michigan and a few others, so I don't know. I think those are the types of things
where if you have a clear position of need, they'll fit you in right now. As it pertains to the rest of the roster, though, I mean, like, for example, Roma Dunze says, I'm coming back. You're already signing a couple of, you know, highly ranked receivers in this class. Like, okay, now we know we don't need to go there. I think it just kind of changes. You have to kind of see how it plays out a little bit before you know what kind of spots you're going to be recruiting to in the portal.
That's true. We can be real picky at wide receiver, though. Look, if I can put in crystal balls, I'd put in one for Jeremy Bernard at a spot coming back. From 1 year at Michigan State and put his name in the portal. And I do think there's a spot for him. I don't know how they could fit him in from a transfer perspective and requirements and everything else, but I would put a spot in for him. And we did take, you know, look, we need corners. We need secondaries. And we took.
Yeah. I was going to say on the defensive side of the ball, you have a lot more need.
And you get a lot more need. Yep. Yeah. We took one already. You know, we signed Thaddeus Dixon. So he's from Long Beach City Junior College. And, this is the guy that Coach Juice was recruiting as a high school student. And has had a longstanding relationship with him. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. I haven't viewed this guy's tape front to back, and I think it's hard to tell from Long Beach City College. But the other list of schools that are interested is a little concerning because it's nowhere anywhere near – anywhere Pac-12 caliber talent, versus like Cuevas, the tight end from Cal Poly. You know, it's Michigan, it's Texas, it's Oregon, it's take your pick. So I'm hoping that Coach Juice knows something that we don't, because we really do need that corner and that safety position locked up.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be a huge position of need going into next year. Fortunately, I mean, I think a guy like Asa Turner had turned a little bit of a corner this year. He had a nice year, but you're losing Cook and Michelle Powell. Hopefully he's back and healthy. And I think he had the best season of any of those guys at corner last year. And Cam Fab, a guy who's been in your program for a while, and Dominique Hampton's been in a program for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might have some bodies back there that do okay if you could stay healthy. But I know DeBoer was quoted as saying after that UCLA game or ASU game where they just got torched, and he just said, I didn't know how badly the depth, you know, how much we needed depth back there, and I'm never going to make that mistake again. So I expect that they are going to attack that position pretty hard. And you see they've got one four-star corner committed, Roderick Pleasant out of Gardena, California, and then they're targeting heavily Caleb Presley, who's the best prospect in the state of Washington. Sorry, I meant to say Curly Reed out of Louisiana, who's the four-star corner. But yeah, and then Caleb Presley, who they're still putting the full court Presley on. Even though he's committed to Oregon, he's a Rainier Beach guy. You look in the history of Husky recruiting, although it's been worse recently, very rarely losing in like city of Seattle kids. The Huskies are still in the mix for Presley, and you get two four-star corners in this class. all of a sudden you start to, you know, things are looking up there.
That's right. Yeah. And that's where we need the help. I mean, I think, look, you can't rely on the offense putting up 50 a game, 45 plus a game, because there's no margin for error. And as we saw, you know, with ASU and with UCLA, you're going to have a hiccup now or then where you can't put up high 40s a game. And so you need that secondary to step up. So we'll see. No changes on the defensive side from a coaching perspective, really no changes at all from a coaching perspective. And that's one area where I think, you know, a lot of fans were clamoring. And I started to think about that later on in the season that I'm not sure that we have the full staff to get us back to death row D.
Yeah. I mean, you're building a different type of team, you know? I mean, look at what this looked like 3 years ago. And you know, and what it looks like today. I mean, right now, you know, if Penix is on the roster next year, you're going to be in every game and you'll be favored in most of them. Once he leaves, and on the defensive side of the ball, if you haven't shored up, then this is starting to look pretty dicey going into year three. So, you know, DeBoer and the coaching staff are looking at that. I expect if we see a glaring weakness out there, especially in one of the position coaches or whatnot, I expect, even though DeBoer's been with a lot of these guys for many, many years, I expect he'll make the changes that we need to make.
That'll be interesting to see. Well, hey, look, we've got a big game coming up against Texas in the Alamo Bowl. And for Husky fans that can make it, particularly those that are located close by, it'd be great to see some purple and gold on TV. What an exciting time to be a Husky fan. 10 wins, potential for 11, quarterback Michael Penix coming back. You know, I think really from a transfer portal perspective, it's nice to see this level of stability in the program. It's just incredible to see. So, hey, a lot to look forward to and a lot to be excited about going into 2023.
Yeah, we'll break it all down, the 2023. I'm excited to do the 2023 preview show because I think there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about there. But we got one more game. You know, let's focus on the one more against our old ball coach, our old nemesis, I guess now, Sark. And let's just win that Alamo Bowl and beat Sark and rub his face in it a little bit.
We have to. We absolutely have to. And it's interesting with Sark. It's like now you're at a point where so many years have been gone past that thing. And that, you know, I know my feelings, I think, are the same as many. It's like I'm just happy that things ended up well for Sark. You know, he could have gone down a fully different path, and that things ended up so well for the Huskies where it couldn't have been a better thing, where he takes that USC job, we get Coach Pete and get off to this rocket ship, which is incredible. And it's really cool to see him landed on his feet, you know, this many years removed. And then, you know, with Coach Kwiatkowski, I think that was a really tough loss for Husky Nation. And you know, it's interesting to see, I wonder, you know, they struggled on defense this year, and it's going to be really interesting to see his tenure and how it shapes out at Texas as well.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think he's on the chopping block. I think if you're a Texas fan, and you're looking for changes and you're getting frustrated after year two. I mean, they were what, 5-7 last year? Or,
right.
Not even in a bowl game. They take a nice jump, 8-4 this year. But I mean, I think the Texas fans who may be listening to this podcast, I think we know from experience, Sark will always let you down once or twice a season where it's like, that's a game we should have won. It feels like that always used to happen. And he would play, he would also have the team playing kind of above and beyond its capabilities at times too. We won big games against USC when they were still kind of in the thick of their dynasty when Sark was the head coach as well. And we played teams like, you know, Notre Dame down to the wire. We played, you know, we played some tough games, but we had high ups, but we had low lows with Sark as head coach. And I think you're a Husky fan, you're looking at this week or this next game and thinking, let's just pull a Sark on Sark and beat Texas in the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, love it. Absolutely love it. I think it's going to be great to see, you know, again, having seen gone down there for the Bama-Texas game this year and seen the fans there, I think they're going to travel real well for that, particularly being so close to home.
Well, they're they might have enough fans in San Antonio.
Just to go.
To just fill the stadium, yeah.
That's rough for the alumni population that big. Last note before we sign off, man, just RIP to the Pirate, Coach Leach. What an absolute shock. I mean, when that came through and just thought, hey, this is – he's got to pull through. And now, I mean, you think back on our times in the Mifflin, like, has there ever been a coach from Wazoo or Oregon that is a Husky fan that you enjoyed so much, even when he was there, of like, how many times when they put the mic on a coach for a post game or a mid game interview, and you just, this is a great time to go to the bathroom. I'm going to get some coach speak. And it was, you're glued to your seat for every word of it. You know, I think he was the, like, that old, you know, Dos Equis most interesting man of the world personified, you know, of the kind of stories that he could come together with, and will definitely be missed.
His background is just incredible. Played high school football, pretty mediocre is from what I understand. Kind of goes to law school, decides mm-hmm. he doesn't want to be a lawyer, and says, you know what? What I really want to do is try coaching. Took all kinds of crap jobs. Finally got noticed by Bob Stoops, of all people. Brings him in as OC. They win a national title at Oklahoma, and then you see it take off from there. I mean, Sonny Dykes, who's in the football playoff this year, you know, he was one of the lead disciples of the Leach and the air raid offense. And they're all over the coaching ranks these days. I mean, in terms of, he was one of the more influential figures, and you kind of love him or hate him. And I mean, you know, everything you said is true. He's such a quotable, interesting guy. I always admired him for how innovative and interesting he made things. But he really changed the game in a way that Steve Sarkisian's never going to change the game that way, you know, and even, you know, you could be a great coach even, but he really was an innovator and was a genius in some ways. Interviewed for the Husky job when Sark got the job back in 2008, BT. And the quote I heard on the message board Geniuses was at that time was, Scott Woodward, the then athletic director, said he was weird. And I mean, you know what? He was right. Mike Leach was weird, but he was also kind of a genius.
I think his personality is one that I think put people at ease as well, where, you know, I mean, how many coaches were there? They're coming in, you're interviewing Nick Saban. His whole goal is to get you, like, I'm going to get you as nervous as absolute possible for this thing. You know, yeah. Give me the snowball, because I'm going to glare into your eyes, and all I want is that snowball question.
So there was a great article. I read a lot of stuff about Leach the last 24 hours. I mean, it was it's really sad, you know, and he was such an interesting character, and there's so many great things written about him, and he gave so much access to the media, right? So he had all these, he did the book with Bruce Feldman, Swing Your Sword, and he had always kind of sit down for an interview, known for kind of answering any question, right? Coach, I'm getting married. What do you, you know, all those, all those are great quotes, right? But there was one article in The Athletic this week that was talking about how Leach, basically when he interviewed assistants, didn't talk football. He just wanted to, like, get to know them and talk about all this other stuff. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, no. And then this is, I do a 3-4 with a 2-gap. And he's like, yeah. I want to hear, what are you doing about your swimming pool? Because, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he would just go totally off topic. And seeing that and then the article is comparing other coaches and how they interview, and Nick Saban, of course, all business. Sean McVay wanting to break down X's and O's and, like, you know, throw these difficult situations at his assistants. And Mike Leach is here just like, hey, let's talk about anything but football.
That's right. Yeah. Let's get into, like, ancient river society history and chat. Yeah, man.
Mesopotamia.
Mesopotamia. That's right. Yeah, which mascots would win in a fight. But yeah, I mean, geez, just so young. Like, it's kind of, I mean, 61, you know, to die at that age is just nuts. He leaves a pretty cool legacy on football, and for being someone who I think is just completely unforgettable, and for someone that even, like, is an opposing fan, as a, you know, a Washington fan, to see him, definitely will be missed. We will be back after the Alamo Bowl to talk about this, talk about the 2023 season, look ahead. So much to be excited about as a Husky fan, but hey, let's get that win in the Alamo Bowl against Texas, huh? Can I get a go, Dogs?
Go, Dogs. Oof. Oof.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Los perros esquimales están arriba. Aquí estamos. Aquí nos quedamos y aquí ganamos. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.